Thank you, Ephraim. I'm going to ask all speakers from this realm to come at the table at the front. We're going to put up the light. And we're going to go straight to the question period. We have about 20 minutes. And as we did previously in the day, please introduce yourself, your organization, and try to be brief and succinct in your question. The theme of this panel was research and capacity building. Capacity building, what and where are the priorities? Many have been mentioned. What are your perspective? And we'll start on this microphone, please.
Hi, my name is Caroline Baig, and I'm with McGill University. And I guess that's kind of addresses, I mean, some of the panel, but this is especially addressed, I think, to Dino Keating, because he comes from, the research is very specific. And it's a bit of a provocative question. I was wondering, this morning there was a lot of talk about funding for commercial or large-scale agriculture versus smallholder and small farms. I'm wondering if the lack of research into, or lack of funding into research of vegetable production is because it's really, really smallholder farms. And it does tend to be women. I also realize that it could be because of storage issues and processing, but I'm wondering if there's other reasons out there.
Thank you. Do you know, if you want to hold back just a second, I'm going to take a slate of two or three questions to give the opportunity to everyone to bring their voice to the mic and also for you to prepare. Sir.
Okay. Sam Gamada, Agriculture Canada. Actually, mine is more of a comment. In the capacity building side that people discussed, one area that wasn't covered was the scientific institutions in the local, in developing countries. I just wanted to point out that I'm involved in a small project in Ethiopia, at Consol, the Ethiopia-Canada project, working with the Ethiopian Soil Science Society. It's basically umbrellaed by the Ag Institute of Canada and funded by CETA. And actually, there are a number of different scientists from Ag Canada that are involved in similar capacity building linkages in Vietnam, in Ghana, and in Tanzania, Sri Lanka. Anyway, an important component is building the capacity of the institutions in the local countries.
Thank you very much. I'm going to this mic, just alternate. Sir?
Yeah, hi. My name is Adrian. I'm a graduate student in Globalization and International Development at University of Ottawa. I think there is a knowledge and capital and technological gap between rich countries and poor people, and that makes them, this gap affect poor people that are suffering from hunger. This gap prevents them from improving their livelihoods and from investing in productivity and from making agriculture profitable for them. And my question is, what do you think is the role of patents in food security in this in the context of transfer of technology? Thank you very much.
And your question is directed to the panel as a whole, I suspect. Thank you. So let's start with these three first points. There's one question that talks directly to small-scale farming, vegetable, woman. You want to address that one, Dino, please?
Well, I'm not sure if it's the cause of the lack of funding. It's probably the reason why there should be funding. And I think perhaps one of the other issues that might need to be considered is that horticulture of fruit and veg is a very broad-based church. You know, if you're dealing with rice and rice alone, it's very easy to see what the problems are, perhaps what the output might be, and there is a large community of people working on these subjects. But for vegetables, it's so disparate. There are so many potential species to work on. There are so many exotic species currently being worked on. And, in fact, the research community is quite small. And if my experience of the CGIAR tells me anything, that if you are a large institution, money comes to you. If you're a small institution, it doesn't, to any great extent. And if that sounds like sour grapes, well, so be it.
Thank you, Dave. Any of the members of the panel want to comment on the role of patent, IPR, and food security? No?
Yes, I'll do it.
Nino?
Well, if you're a public sector organization like ICRISAT or like ABRDC or some of the others, then the policy they have adopted is to make sure that all of their research is put into the public domain and is contributing towards things like the European non-patent database so that prior knowledge can be proved. My belief is that if you go down a patent route, it can end up to be extremely expensive. I know that ILRI spent more than $100,000 in patenting some of their vaccine research, and in fact it wasn't particularly successful. I know that that is the normal model in a North American commercialized approach, but I believe that at a global level, particularly in the developing world, and dealing with small holders, that it's much better to keep this stuff in the public domain than attempting to have some sort of partiality over time.
And the third point that was brought in as a comment was by a gentleman that talked about local organizational strengthening. And I guess this is something that, you know, many of you have experienced in your organization. And we were mentioning in some of the presentation, you know, the fact that there is some country that might be better off in terms of capacity. What is your perspective on this local organizational strengthening? And as well, you know, I would have from my co-chair place, the nature of the collaboration that could take place between, you know, the BRICS country, whether it's Brazil, India, China, and other country, in order to strengthen the organization as well as the research.
I just touch on an area where we have seen and also participated in that there has been the AGRAs and so on who have identified a few universities where they've looked at them as center of excellence within Sub-Saharan Africa, which my friend there was talking about. One of them is Crop Improvement Center in Ghana. And what we normally do is that you have got the coursework component of it, and then international organizations like us and so on take these students to do their research work. So we work with them together. But there is also capacity building in terms of small, short courses and so on in specialized high-tech areas and so on where, for example, now we have Becca in which Dr. Mukisira talked about also, which is based in ILRI but is a regional sort of thing. So there are those things going on at the moment.
Thanks. I just wanted to mention that it is a very critical area. I think I had it in my slide but didn't talk about it in the interest of time. But I think we are losing the disciplinary scientific capacity. If you go into most of these national institutions and ask for a soil scientists, crop physiologists, and so on, that is being really eroded. There's nobody, basically, or there's very junior people that also need the capacity strengthening. That's on one hand. And then the equipment, laboratories, for example, I'm a natural scientist, there's nothing in the laboratories. There was a point where it was picking up and would really see even visiting scientists from the north, from advanced research institutions coming in and being able to operate. But I'm not seeing that anymore in most of these countries, and I think that's an area that we really need to strengthen. We've tried to team up on split or sandwich programs with the universities such as Wageningen and the other universities also in Europe and also in the US. Those is, have been very productive, and I think if that can be strengthened, but in the sense that those people conduct their research in Africa and remain attached to their national institutions, and they are not like taken away.
Thank you. Dr. Mukasira.
Is it working?
Yeah, it's working.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think the issue of capacity in developing countries and also in Africa, to be specific, is critical to the whole process of research and development. And when we are talking about what I was presenting here, the National Agricultural Research System, and making it stronger within country and within specific regions. Like, I think we have had a lot of platforms created by the Association to Strengthen Agricultural Research in East and Central Africa. The headquarters is in Entebbe, and using those platforms, we are attracting a lot of partnerships, you know, and being an umbrella organization, people benefit from it, and we would like to use that more and hopefully build the capacity within in-country. And the whole process of mentorship, you know, having to mentor young people who have been recently recruited to be able to address higher levels of research, you know, or complex research is something. And therefore, succession planning comes in. Muxira is here today, tomorrow is not there. And therefore, who is there? We have organizations must look at succession planning and be able to broaden the minds of the scientists there so that they can articulate and address issues, you know, complex issues, using almost, integrated approaches, integrated agricultural research for development. That's what we are saying. And therefore, the undergraduates, I think, the courses that universities should offer should actually broaden, be able to potentially, you know, broaden the understanding of many disciplines so that later in the years after you have graduated, you can be able to be a whole round person. And Mr. Chairman, I don't know whether you are chairman or facilitator, I'm saying that capacity building must be addressed and it must be part of the curriculum also you offer at the university level. Because I think many times we walk out of the university gate and we only know about what we went there for. At the end of the day, holistic approaches meet you at the gate and you don't know how to address the issues at farm level. And therefore, the critical mass in adaptive research must actually be enhanced and universities must be the first candidate to actually address those issues. Thank you.
Thank you. One last intervention, Doctor.
Thank you very much. In addition to what has been said, I think forging partnerships between institutions, not just between the institutions in developing countries and the Western institutions, but with some of these international centers within, for instance, in Africa, I can imagine the kind of mileage that is obtained when an institution like mine forges a collaborative partnership with IITA, and those facilities that are not available in my own institution that we cannot access because of the high cost, they can be accessed through the institution. Sometimes also joint research projects, sharing of a supervision of graduate theses. These are avenues that should be explored.
Thank you. Jim?
Jim Cornelius with the Canadian Food Grains Bank. Question for ICRISAT and the soil management program in Southern Africa. In the context of working with fragile soils, depleted soils, erratic rainfall, climate change pressures, I'm wondering to what extent you're introducing or drawing on conservation farming practices of no-till, of covering of the soil, of various rotations, as an integral part of the research and extension work that you're doing.
Thank you, and we'll take another question over here.
Thanks. Richard Veenstra, Action Against Hunger, Action Contre la Faim. It sounded like this morning we were talking about how agriculture is coming back onto the agenda after having been absent from it. And I think that the group of you have succeeded in putting food back on the agenda by talking about a more holistic approach, by talking about consumers, by talking about nutrition and malnutrition. And it almost appears to me that when Mr. Onyedo was talking about a paradigm shift, we could talk about the paradigm shift in terms of from producers to consumers. But the question I have for you is there a political agenda or a policy agenda that comes to mind for you? How, if there is something to push, how do we go about it?
Thank you. We'll start with these two. So first set towards ICRISAT.
ICRISAT, in one of the works we are doing, particularly in Southern Africa, we are working on conservation agriculture. But the challenge about conservation agriculture is that it depends, among others, in leaving the organic matter on the soil. But the length of the dry season is about 6 months in some of these places, and therefore farmers in the dry areas are not only working on crops and so on, they also depend on livestock for their livelihoods. And therefore, there's that competition for straw being left on the ground, and at that time when there is less for animal feed to give to the animals. That's one. The second thing is that you have got also things like termites and so on that break up those things. So we're working with that. Those are some of the challenges. I understand that in Zambia you can help me, is that it seems to be working very well on medium to large scale farms than the small scale farms. So that's the challenge we are looking at also at the same time.
All right, thanks very much. I think I'll just add to that we really have embraced conservation and agriculture is one of the options. Like I said, for Sofexa, we said we look at best feeds, which means farmer circumstances will determine whether conservation agriculture is suitable or another option is suitable, or do we get it as a full package in what is defined as conservation agriculture, or do we get an iterative process until we attain the level at which we say this is conservation agriculture. That's what we are open to. I know we have had a bit of quite some discussion with people who drive for conservation agriculture with no compromises, and it has been difficult for some of the factors raised to get it on the farms like that.
Just a comment on the issue of the paradigm shift from producers to consumers. I think that for those of us who operate from Africa, from the developing societies, should see our centers, our universities, as agents of change and agents of development. If you're doing science within the walls of that university, the question should be asked, science for what? I think it's a luxury that we no longer can afford to get into. It's important, but I'm not saying that it's not important, but at this stage with the challenges that face us, I would rather deal with a situation where people are working with real-life problems to improve their immediate communities, to impact on their immediate communities. And so as a matter of deliberate policy in my university, this approach has been adopted and is being practiced. That The agriculturist is not just interested in improving productivity. He must also be interested in at the end point. After improving productivity, what impacts does the technology he transfers have on the overall life of the community, of the individual? I always give an example. If you have a local farmer who is a drunkard and he's sober enough to absorb part of the technology you are transferring and he produces more, he only has more money that he will not manage. You have not addressed the poverty issues around him. If the same thing goes with the issue of health, he can produce money, but he still lives in environments that have poor sanitation and things like that. So that paradigm shift is a consequence of our awareness, our realization that at this present time point, at the present point in our development, given the myriad of social problems, socioeconomic problems that confront us, we as universities, we as centers of learning, must make a deliberate effort to engage with the communities around us and act as agents of change.
Thank you. I'm going to pass the mic to Dr. Yvon Martel for the wrap-up and a few words. Thanks.
Merci, Jean. I would like to conclude by thanking the organizer of this conference for having a building research capacity part of the agenda. It is important. And to solve food security in the world, that is an increasing challenge, building research capacity is also part of the solution. We used to say the research in agriculture and food used to be done mostly in OECD countries. This is changing rapidly. We've heard that countries like China and India are increasing their capacity in the number of scientists. And for agriculture and food, the increase in number of researchers anywhere in the world is good for the world. The challenge is how we're going to coordinate and manage this together for the benefit of better food security in the future. I would like to thank the speakers for their presentation. We've heard that priorities can be set and could be large, but different also depending on the countries we're coming from. We need to ensure that the transfer of knowledge is occurring between the labs and the producers. The research must be holistic. A focus should be on crop diversity. We should look at management of soil and water in the context of climate change. We should work in partnership. And most of all, at the end, we should have a sustainable financial system that would support the research in the building capacity mode. So thank you, all the speakers. Thank you for the participant for this session.